It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. A lovely day out here in Hawaii. It's absolutely beautiful. The rain coming down and filling the valleys, and it's just beautiful. Roads are wet, so be careful. And hope you arrive alive and drive safely. We got some interesting things that we'll talk about. Later on, we'll talk about the boat that's still leaving its impact out there at off Waikiki Kaimana Beach, but we'll talk about that later. And a few other things, but today, you know, we're all so worried about the impact of the environmental impacts that we as human beings leave and what we do to harm the environment, and we're kind of somewhat destructive just by the way we do things. All of us, that means, when I say we, all of us, the consumers, the producers, the what have you. But an interesting development is occurring as we talk this morning, and I say very interesting because there is a plan in December 1, 2017, on Friday, 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., at the University of Hawaii at Manoa, East-West Center, the Aimin Hall. Now, what is happening is that there's a public participation, and hear this right now, public participation in a polarized era, the good, the bad, the future. And there's going to be 2 days, day one, taking stock and devising solutions. Friday, December 1. You can go online or go to carolcox.com and you can find the actual link to that if you want to sign up. It's a varied price. It's $185 for some categories, and you'll have to go there and look to see what fit you. But it's a two-day symposium. But day one, taking stock and devising solutions. And day two, public consultation strategies and skills. And on Saturday, that's Saturday, December 2nd, at 8:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the University of Hawaii, William Richardson School of Law. And here are the sponsors of that and organizers. ACORD 3.0 Network, University of Hawaii Public Policy Center, Honolulu Civil Beat, Ulupono Initiative, Think Tech Hawaii, and William S. Richardson School of Law. So I've asked, you've got to listen and participate in this to fully understand. There's some interesting proposals or suggestions coming out of this and the purpose for having it. And there's a House concurrent rule that is 120, number 120, House concurrent rules that went through the legislature this year. And it has some interesting things, and we'll talk specifically about those. And I have invited Ms. Bridget Hammerquist and Eileen Ketsloins to join me and talk about this, because it has some interesting ramifications and suggestions, and it's stirring up some concerns that, you know, always things need to be tweaked and fixed if there are problems. But if they're just problems that generated by, let's say, I'm doing something and the process, I don't like the way the process went and I didn't adequately respond to it, then I personally decide, well, if I didn't get it to work for me, I'll go out and change the whole system. Well, there's a bit of that of concern in this effort. So basically, why this gathering, they say, in the late 70s, in the face of strong new environmental laws, government agencies adopted new community consultation strategies. Foremost among these were National Environment Protection Act, the NEPA, requirement sunshine laws, and use of public meetings whenever new policies, projects, and plans were proposed. Called by the different names, public consultation, civic participation, stakeholder engagement, they promised. Earlier notice of impending decisions, more responsiveness from slow-moving, underfunded, and sometimes secretive bureaucracies. additional opportunities for an attention to diverse voices, a more level playing field between government, corporation, and communities, new checks and balances against authoritative decision-making, and more transparent and informed decision-making. You getting this? Three decades later, too many public meetings have become perfunctory or, quote, tick the box, end quote, compliance exercises, or simply fresh combat zone for old ideological wars. Many have evolved into formulaic productions by project proponents or well-organized opposition campaigns by opponents. Both represent an unfunded bureaucratic burden for agencies to endure. Further, as the public discourse has become increasingly polarized and hostile, it gets harder to arrive at decisions that can be supported by plurality of citizens. Business often feel victimized by the tyranny of the minorities that come out to public meetings, and advocacy groups feel frustrated that they have so little impact. This full-day gathering, followed by a half-day skill and strategy workshop, will take stock of how public participation is faring, gather ideas for changes to the way public consultation takes place, and spark conversations that have consequences now and for the future. Taking stock and devising solutions is the first one they're going to have, and then basically why public participation and consultation matter. These are some of the subjects they will be talking about. And the landscape of existing consultation practices. Overview of key requirements for public consultation, sunshine laws, EIS, agency rulemaking, planning permits, and Professor Denise Antolini, Associate Dean William S. Richardson, School of Law. Nonprofit perspective, Marjorie Ziegler will be there, of the Executive Director of Conservation Council of Hawaii. Business perspective, Mitchell Dollier, Castle Foundation, elected. I guess it just says business perspective. The list is Mr. Ed Case, elected official perspective. Ed Case will be there, the Honorable Ed Case, House of Representatives. And learning from Scott McCrary, the Ed Court 3.0, Kaka'ako Citizens Advisory. So complete streets planning, AHA 2016, Native Hawaiian. So you need to be there, folks. This is a... We'll discuss in greater details, but this is something you definitely want to be part of all the things that you can chase. This is one of those. They want to revamp, rebuild, and reconfigure what we do have in environmental control, environmental protection through OEQC and what have you. Caller, thank you for calling.
Good morning, Carol.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. This is Bridget Hammerquist calling in from Kauai.
All righty. 8888?
Yes, I tried the other 524-9510, but it just rang.
Okay, we didn't see a light there. Okay. Well, anyway, I was given an introduction, and Bridget, if you would give a brief introduction. You've been on the show several times, and
yes,
we've worked
thank
together,
you.
And you're from Kauai. But and I'm trying to explain... this process, but you can also add in if you'd like to. But go ahead and introduce yourself, Bridget.
Sure. My name is Bridget Hammerquist. I was born on the Big Island and raised most of my life in Hawaii and live on the island of Kauai and have actually. My family moved here when I was 16. And I've not been an activist. I've never really been involved in issues in the environment, but I got involved because the... Ulupono Initiative and Piero Midiar wanted to put an industrial dairy 6/10 of a mile upslope from a beautiful beach line that's relatively undeveloped on Kauai. It's Maholepu Valley and Coast. And in the process, we had, as you know from the times I've been on your show, we had quite a large struggle to gather the scientific data and support for why that would be such a horrible disaster for the environment in that location, because of the hydrology, the natural drainage, the springs on the site, the streams that run directly to the beach and the ocean, and a keiki pool less than 2 miles downshore at Poipu. That's a real loved location for residents and visitors alike. So we got involved, and we've been working on it since February of 2014. So it's going on 4 years soon that we've been involved, and it's been quite the education. I almost feel like I've gone to school all over again.
Mm-hmm.
But in the process of going through this, we had a federal court case. There was a state court case. All of the evidence was brought to light at the Department of Health, and the Environmental Quality Control Office got involved. Many agencies got involved. There was comment filed by Department of Land and Natural Resources. There was comment filed by the internal workings of DOH, by the Clean Water Branch. The environmental process worked, Carol, and people filed their comments, brought the evidence forward. The attorneys representing the Grand Hyatt owners on Kauai, which was the largest resort that would have been heavily impacted because it was so close to the proposed area, they pretty much went to the expense of doing an alternate environmental impact study and presented a 1,000-page comment to the Department of Health that was well credentialed and well documented.
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite a process, and the process worked. The Office of Environmental Quality Control was asked to weigh in and advise Dr. Pressler, the head of the Department of Health, on whether or not the EIS was ready to be finaled, and they advised that it wasn't, that it hadn't complied with the Hawaii Environmental Protection Act, and that people's comments hadn't been answered, and that that the dairy farm people had even conducted studies after the period for public comment closed. And they wanted the department to consider those studies, even though the public had never seen them or been able to comment on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the director for the Office of Environmental Quality said to the director of Department of Health, I don't think this is really ready to be finaled or to be accepted as a final EIS. And then before the director could act, the dairy farm people pulled their final EIS. They withdrew it from the department so that it couldn't be acted on. Which is an option. An applicant or an agency can always withdraw their EIS voluntarily, at which point they have to start again. According to the law, they have to go back and reinitiate the EIS process. And the dairy farm people did get a letter from the Department of Health to that effect, telling them they'd have to come out with a new draft EIS, and they'd have to have public comment period again, and they'd have to give people a chance to contribute. So that whole system worked. Meanwhile, we had these two cases going, one in federal court, because we found that even though they said to the contrary, we found they actually had begun developing the farm site without the proper permit. And we filed a challenge in federal court, and we told the federal judge, you know, they're not following the law. Because the Clean Water Act doesn't allow them to pollute and send waste into the environment and down into the ocean as they were when they don't have what's called a National Pollution Elimination Discharge Permit. And they had applied for a permit with the state, but they'd never gotten it. In fact, their applications were always never completed. They would put the paperwork in, and they'd spend months going back and forth with the department, but they wouldn't quite finish giving the information. They'd never quite give all the information to the department that they should. And so then their time would run out, and they'd have to reapply. And the federal judge looked at all this. We put it before her, and she said, you're right, to the Friends of Mahalepu who brought the federal case. She said, you're right. They need this permit. There's a common plan of development going on here, and they can't do that without a stormwater construction permit.
Mm-hmm.
And she found further that we were also right when we found that 8 of the 13 construction activities that they needed a permit for, they'd already started without the permit. They've started excavating their effluent pond. And they had no permission to dig a big deep hole in the ground,
mm-hmm.
but they did it anyway. And so the judge said, no further activity on that site, none, until there's proper permits issued by the proper agency. Meanwhile, there was a state court case going kind of at the same time, Carol.
That you,
Ulupono? That was filed by the Grand Hyatt.
But, okay, got it.
And by a Honolulu law firm.
Got you, okay.
And the judge that presided over that, the state court judge, was Judge Randall Valenciano, who's the presiding judge of the state environmental court. And he came out with a ruling independent of the federal court judge's ruling. They both ruled within months of each other. I think one was entered May 31st and one was entered July 4th. But the federal, the state court case, excuse me, Judge Valenciano, said, you know, this is not right because you didn't complete the environmental assessment that the law requires you to complete. Why does the law require it? It's not for every farmer. You know, I mean, why Dairy Farms goes to the paper and they said, oh, this is going to hurt small farmers everywhere. No, it's not. It has nothing to do with small farmers. This is an industrial scale operation with a huge waste pond to collect millions of gallons of manure water, wastewater.
Mm-hmm.
And the average farmer doesn't have a holding pond or a collection point like that. None of them do. And in any case, the statutes in the state of Hawaii, one of the triggers that makes people have to do an environmental study when they have a large animal operation, a large animal feed operation, is if they produce waste that is more than the waste that would be produced by a household of 25 households,
mm-hmm.
they have to get an environmental impact study because this is all poop and pee that's going to go on the ground. And you got to know where it's going to go, right? And that's what the statute says. It's real simple. You produce waste. You have a wastewater operation, a waste treatment operation, a waste collection operation that gathers waste that exceeds that which would be produced by 25 households. You've got to get an environmental study on board. And Judge Valenciano said, any approvals or permits you've gotten up till today without successfully completing an environmental study is putting the cart before the horse. He said, you could go the way you're going. You could go in and ask for permission to function. But then when you try to do an environmental study after you already start, all that is, he said, is a pro hoc validation for a decision that's already made.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work that way. So he ordered all the approvals revoked and told them pretty much the same thing the federal judge did. Get your environmental study completed, get it approved, and then apply for your permit.
And who would they be sending this environmental study to for approval?
They would be sending it to the Department of Health because they were designated as the receiving agency,
mm-hmm.
because the Department of Health regulates animal feed operations in the state of Hawaii.
Under the Environmental Quality Office.
Well, the Environmental Quality Control is a separate department.
Mm-hmm. Under the Department of Health.
They're not under. They're actually on a par, like the director of the Office of Environmental Quality Control
mm-hmm.
and the director of the Department of Health both answer to the governor. But they're affiliate agencies because a lot of what they do goes hand in hand. When they were set up administratively, they have a lot of the same administrative functions. Handle both DOH and OEQC because they're working on the same stuff. They're working on clean water, wastewater, you know, anything that impacts the environment.
But were they to require to get Pressler's, for example, her signature on the final approval?
Oh, yes, yes,
okay.
Yes.
Okay,
And what Pressler did was Virginia Pressler, who's the director of Department of Health, knew this was a big operation, and she asked the Office of Environmental Quality Control for their guidance and ask them to review the environmental impact, the final environmental impact study that the dairy people lodged with the State Department of Health, because they were the receiving agency. But as the director, she has the right to ask any agency to comment on or help review that document and give her their opinion. And she asked the director of the Environmental Quality Control Office to review and advise her as to whether or not their final EIS was indeed final and was it ready to be approved by the agency, should the agency decide to do so. And the director of the Office of Environmental Quality Control did a very thorough job, filed, I believe, a 116-page report with lots of examples and exhibits. And he told Dr. Pressler in his report that in his department's opinion, they were not ready to be approved, that in fact they didn't comply with the Hawaii Environmental Protection Act.
And they didn't mean Ulupono or Hawaii Dairy Farmers?
Ulupono and Group 70
okay.
were the people advancing the project called Hawaii Dairy Farmers.
Okay.
And Ulupono is owned by Pierre Omidyar. Mm-hmm. And so this project had the backing of Mr. Omidyar. It was to be his project on Kauai. And Group 70 International is a contracting firm that generally is involved in architecture, design, engineering of large residential developments or hotels and resorts. To my knowledge, this was their first venture ever into an agricultural project. They, in fact, when I called, when I learned that they were to be the contractor that was running the environmental impact study, I had a question on something that was going down, and I called, and the person I spoke with said, "Oh no, we don't do agricultural projects." And we went to their website, and sure enough, there was no history of them having been involved in agriculture at all.
Mm-hmm.
But they helped Mr. Omidyar develop the dairy farm plan, and then he turned to them and said, "Okay, now we have to do an environmental impact study," and so he hired the very same company, which we always felt was not a great idea because it's asking a lot to ask the developer of a plan to then go back and do an environmental study of that same plan, because obviously they're going to want to, you know, they've already charged him for the plan, so when they do the environmental impact study, they're certainly not going to come out and say, "Oh, actually, you know, our plan's a bad idea." You know, I mean, that's really expecting more than would likely happen ever. So we felt it wasn't really an independent environmental impact study to begin with. And I think the state court judge, Judge Valenciano, was similarly affected because he made the comment that to have the EIS after the fact is nothing short of a pro hoc rationalization, was his word, for what you've already put in play, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that it all kind of came together. There was a lot of fronts. So we had two independent courts, found them to be operating without the permits and found that they had though they said they hadn't been engaged in construction activities, a federal court judge looked at all the evidence and said, "Yes, you have, and that's a violation of the law."
Now, their activities, was it available and obvious to the general public who would be giving opinion into OEQC when it came to the comment period time on this project?
Well, not exactly. That was one of the things that helped the Hyatt's lawsuit. When Friends of Mahalepu filed the Clean Water Act case, you know, in federal court, one of the things our lawyers did, the law offices of Charles Tebbett in Oregon did, which was really a brilliant move, was they asked first for the dairy people to agree to have a site inspection, which actually is quite normal in a Clean Water Act challenge. And, of course, the Pierre Omidyar team said, no, you can't come on the site, you can't see what we're doing. And he asked a second time, and they said, no, no way. So then he filed what's called a motion to compel.
Mm-hmm.
And we put it before the federal judge and said, look, you know, this is the challenge. This is a little bit we know, but we really feel a site inspection is warranted because of the size of this development and the location and the sensitivity of the environment. All their drinking water wells are right there at that site within 700 feet of it. There's a freshwater stream that drains the site. It goes directly to the beach and the ocean. So that's waters of the U.S. that are potentially being contaminated. And the judge agreed with them. She agreed with Mr. Tebbett and said, you're right. And she ordered the dairy farm developer to allow a site inspection. And so we finally got on the property in March of 2016, a year after we filed the Clean Water Act case. And the site inspection was really valuable because we were able to take soil samples, water quality samples. They were able to tour the farm. They were able to see the excavation of the effluent pond, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they originally tried to deny they'd been doing any digging and had their effluent pond started. And this is back to your question. Was it easily seen? No. Friends of Mahalapu have some wonderful, good people that have contributed hard-earned money to help support the fight. And one of the things we did with our contributions was we hired a helicopter. And we flew over the dairy farm. And that's really where we got a lot of our beginning information. And, in fact, the pictures taken from the helicopter were put before the judge to support the action, to support the fact that we needed to go on site and actually physically inspect it. And one of our members was particularly, she's an artist, and she's really has a good eye, and she flew over and she said, that wasn't there before. That pool of water wasn't there before. Because what happened was when they did this, dug this big hole, it's about a third of an acre. When they dug this big hole in about a third of an acre of area, this blue azure pool formed, and it has, I think, something to do with the limestone in the area, but it was a beautiful blue, almost an aqua blue, and it had never been on that site before. You know, it looked like somebody put in a swimming pool. Well, what happened was we later learned when we took the deposition of the proposed farm manager is that they hit water at two foot down. In some parts of the dig, 3 feet down, they hit the water table.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing just filled up. They had to stop digging because they were digging in water. So, but there it was. There it sat, you know, this big hole in the ground. And when we did the site inspection, our lawyer said, I want to see that other pond. They actually denied that it existed. But Eileen was there that day, the woman who had seen it from the air, and she said, I'll show you where it is. And when she started toward the direction of the property where it was located, the farm manager took off on an ATV, because he knew right where it was. And the Ulupono team representative that was there said, oh, I didn't know that was there. So it was quite the
now,
it was quite the cloak and dagger effort.
The people that
it was there, it was documented, and
the people that wanted it, that built it, and it's their project, claim that they didn't know that a pond had been dug.
Yeah, that's what they tried to tell the lawyer.
And that, okay, we'll talk more about the public's point of this, but this is, there's a lot of things that are presenting themselves here and big questions. So there's that group is proposing this, and we're going to talk about the HCR, House Concurrent Rule number 120, and how they've now advanced that. The announcement that I made about that meeting at UH I want to just offer that so that people can make connect and know that what we're talking about is relevant to what I talked about earlier, and we'll get in greater details. This is the Carol Cox Show. I'm with Bridget Hammerquist of Mahaulepu side of Kauai. Friends of Mahaulepu.org is the website. You can join in and or send them a message of support. But sorry about that interruption, but you're laying it out, and people will be pleasantly surprised when they hear the other shoe fall here in a minute. And I'm kind of excited because you're showing that there's a lot of questions to be asked in this new process and who's proposing it. And so anyway, go ahead, and if you would, take up where you left off. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's fine. So we did get the hard evidence by having the site inspection, and we put it before the federal judge in what was called a summary judgment motion. We asked the court, we said that this is uncontested evidence, hard, concrete evidence. They don't deny, they were forced to admit it exists, and they're violating the Clean Water Act. They've created conduits where there's runoff coming from the property, and it's very probable it's carrying raw soil. They've grubbed and graded all 500 acres, removed all the vegetation and trees from it, and exposed all this bare earth. They cleared and cleaned ditches and canals, and those were draining to the ocean, so they could carry the bare earth off with every rainstorm. And then they excavated this big hole in the ground, which was now going to let mud into the groundwater. So we put all this before the federal judge in a summary judgment motion, and she granted the motion in large part. She left one part of the motion to be decided at a later date, and that was the amount of debris and runoff that had occurred for purposes of awarding damages. But as you know, Carol, we never got that far because the Hawaii Dairy Farms people stipulated to what's called a consent decree, and they agreed not to do any further activity out there until they got a permit. They agreed to suspend all their construction activities. They basically agreed to bring the project to a halt other than for watering the grass that had already been planted.
Mm-hmm. Now,
and they also agreed to institute best management practices, which had not been done. Things like putting down straw wattles to keep the dirt out of the ocean so it didn't go into the stream and drain to the ocean. So they agreed to a long list of items which gave us everything we wanted in the Clean Water Act case. So we signed on the consent decree with them, and the judge entered it as an order. And if people go to friendsofmahaulepu.org, it's M-A-H-A-U-L-E-P-U, there's on our page, when it comes up, right away there's a little box called Breaking News,
mm-hmm.
and you can hit the Read More, and it chronologically goes back in time. And if you go back to early June of this year, you can actually see the consent order, the consent judgment it's called, the consent judgment that was entered as an order by the federal district judge. And you can read the terms that they had to stipulate to and they had to agree to in order to bring the Clean Water Act case to an end, because it wasn't going to go well for them based on her findings in the summary judgment motion. They were going to get hit with damages. And, you know, we could have fought it out to the end also, but it's a very expensive process, and people donated their money to support the effort that had gotten that far. And if we got them to stipulate and be bound by a court order that they were going to protect the environment until they satisfied regulators that it was safe for them to be there, that was giving us everything we really hoped to get.
Now,
because we basically wanted the environment protected.
What was the status of two things here, of their application and permit? Were they still actively seeking a permit from the health department, number one? And at what point of this process, or did it overlap where they were doing this work and the assessment was being conducted by OEQC?
Well, they applied for the NPDES construction permit at least on four different occasions that I know of, on four different dates. And some of the applications spanned a period of as much as a year. And then they requested an extension even on that. But finally, after the federal judge made her finding, December 1st really is when the summary judgment motion got decided, December 1st of 2016. And then Scott Glenn's recommendation to Dr. Pressler came in January of 2016, that the final EIS really wasn't ready for approval because people's comments hadn't been answered and studies had been conducted after the close of public comment period.
And who would be answering those questions for the public during the review?
Ulupono Initiative contractor, Group 70, and Ulupono themselves. They both formulated the answers.
Okay, so in other words, someone, the general public in comment, would write a question or write a comment and then make a recommendation, and Ulupono would respond to it.
When the draft EIS came out in the middle of 2016, it was the 1st of June, people had 45 days to comment. So the comments were filed July 25th of 2016. And so then all those public comments, and there was at least 200 really well-written public comments, went back to Group 70 and Ulupono and Hawaii Dairy Farms. In other words, they all got served with a copy. Everyone who commented was given three addresses that they had to mail their comments to. And then they were obligated under the Hawaii Environmental Protection Act to respond point by point to each of the comments made. What happened then was they then filed what was called a final EIS with the Department of Health, and that was done right about the same time they agreed to the consent decree. It was within days of each other that they did this. They consented to abide by the court's summary judgment determination and cease and desist activity without a permit. And then within a day of that, they filed what was called the final environmental impact study with the department. And then 30 days after they filed it is when, not quite 30 days, actually about 20 days later, the director of the Office of Environmental Quality Control recommended to the director that it really wasn't ready to be finaled. It wasn't ready to be approved. And meanwhile, though, now they had stopped all those construction activities. But the bigger thing, Carol, too, that the public should know is that as we went through this, not only did they engage in them in violation of the Clean Water Act, but the construction permit they'd been applying for had some bold language on it that the developer contractor had to sign under oath. And they when they told the agency that they wanted a permit for the following construction activities, and then they listed them all, like excavating their effluent pond, you know, clearing ditches, putting up fence posts, whatever they listed, okay, whatever item they were listing on their permit application. They then had to sign a box down below that said, we're not seeking a after construction activity permit. In other words, none of the above listed items, the box says, none of the above listed items have been started. And they have to sign a note saying none of the construction activities for which a permit is sought have begun.
Meantime, what point did the judge rule on this or prior to this?
The judge ruled that it definitely had begun. She went back to their activities starting in 2014.
Okay.
So, and she made a list in her summary judgment decision that came out in December 1st, 2016, of all the construction activities they had, in fact, engaged in.
So how does the public respond in this process with an informed opinion if work is being done without permits, which the courts ruled and confirmed that? What would be the public's comment based on? Because if they're not getting the full picture, the whole picture, And this thing is, they're working on it, and it's not complete, and they're not completing the application, and then they're making false statements. How does the public really make an informed opinion?
It's very difficult. In fact, one of our county council members, Councilwoman Joanne Yukimura, actually filed a comment with the department because they changed their, they filed their draft EIS on June 1st. I mean, on June 7th, excuse me. But on June 1st, they came into the department and they made some major changes in the dairy plan. And not all those changes were incorporated in the draft EIS. And she made the comment to Dr. Pressler that the public needs more time than this 45-day comment period because this is a moving target. And that's what she said. It, these people are changing things right in the process, and the public's not even aware that because they gave the notice of the changes to the wastewater branch chief, but they filed their draft EIS with the Office of Environmental Quality Control. So, two different departments, and does the left hand know what the right hand's doing? You know, is kind of what she said. And for the public, it's really chasing a bad actor down a rabbit hole.
to say the least.
It was very difficult. And most people's comments were based just on the science, the environmental science. Mm-hmm. They really didn't, I don't think most of the public, until our judge made her decision in December of 2016, I don't think most of the public realized how many activities, how much construction stuff they'd already done without a permit. And, of course, when the newspaper covered the state court judge's decision this year in 2017, there was even more public awareness that, yes, that federal judge had known what she was talking about because he said the same thing. He reviewed documents for a different litigant. It was the owner of the Grand Hyatt, but they put similar evidence before the state court, and the state court judge found the same thing. Said, you've put the cart before the horse, you're out there developing, you're polluting, and you don't even have a proper permit. And so he said, anything you have is revoked. All approvals to do anything you've been doing is hereby revoked.
So they basically shot themselves in the foot, and I hope the listeners that's listening will keep that particular point in mind. They're crying over spilled milk, they being the people that Ulupono, Jessica Woolley, the former director of OEQC, supported this House Concurrent Rule 120 HD2, which I might add was written, it appears that if you go online and go to the legislative website, you'll see that this one process took 8 different writings. In the introduction, I guess they couldn't get their wording right, but basically what it's saying is that they went on the attack of just reconfiguring OEQC, claiming
well,
that...
Well, they tried basically to get a determination, a legislative determination, that OEQC had somehow applied a double standard to Hawaii Dairy Farm, which really was a specious attack. I mean, it really didn't have any merit at all.
I'm glad you're on my show because I had a different word for that. I'm so glad you're...
But it was, and you know, here's the proof in the pudding, Carol, I think, is if they weren't wrong, if they weren't as thoroughly at fault as two independent judges from two different court systems, one federal, one state, found, okay, if they were somehow being treated unfairly, and you would think at a minimum they would appeal those decisions.
I would.
But neither court decision was appealed because they were caught red-handed. Neither court action was challenged at the appellate level. And those judgments became final because they passed up their right to appeal. Mm-hmm. They had an absolute right to appeal. There was no problem with cost. It's a billionaire that's supporting this project. He could have easily appealed if the courts were wrong or if the facts were in their favor like they're suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, this notice of this symposium that came out, if you read, it's being paid for by Ulupono, the same people that were trying to get the dairy farm. They're now trying to go through a university symposium to cry poor me to the public and say, look at what environmentally concerned citizens have done to us. This is a travesty. Really? I don't think so. I mean, they knew they were going to hurt the environment. It was litigated in court. The court, two independent courts came to the same conclusion. Two different judges, two different staffs, different set of lawyers on both sides, too. Not even the same lawyers. And they came to the same exact findings against them. And they don't take an appeal either decision.
Mm-hmm.
They let both of them become final. Now they're spending Mr. Omidyar's hard-earned money and conducting a symposium, which is nothing more than a grand public relations effort to try and engage the regulator and university types sympathy for the fact that some concerned citizens, thank God, got together, stood up and said, no, you're not going to ruin our homes and our environment. You're not going to destroy our quality of life with your project that's scientifically ill-conceived,
mm-hmm.
and an absolute disaster waiting to happen. No, we're not going to have that. Please,
oh, okay.
Take your interest in doing good for the world and get it done right someplace where it's safe and someplace where the environment can support it.
Mm-hmm. Well, hold that thought, because there is, now we're getting down what I think is, I want to describe as the good part of this. You've laid it out, and hopefully it will benefit the listeners or people who are concerned and might find themselves commenting on this in the future. This bill was actually H.C.R. 120, House Concurrent Rule 120, H.D. 2, was introduced on 3-9-2017. It was offered, and 3-10, and then it was referred to Agriculture and Business and Development. But House Representatives Cregan, DeCoit, Evans, Gates, Ng, Lopresti, Takayama, and Thielen voted and introduced this particular bill. And what this bill was based is, not was, is an assault on turning the sites, training their sites on this process called OEQC, or the review process. And you're going to be shocked, listeners, as to how this thing has been orchestrated. Not very much, in fact, very little public comment on this in building this bill. It took 8 different writings. It was sent to Senator Gabbard at the Senate, crossed over, and he tabled it. It killed it. That's how it's fishy it smelled, apparently. But
yeah. But
we're going to come right back. This is a Carol Cox Show. Are you willing to stay for a little bit more longer? You want to, about 10, 15 minutes?
Yes,
because
sure.
I think this explaining this, the intent of this and what they hope to accomplish, I believe, in my opinion, is disingenuous, and we should not lend, our governor and the government should not lend itself to this. If you don't adhere to the basic rules of the road, don't come back and cry over spilled milk because you didn't adhere to the rules and get your hand slapped, and then blame it on the public who is actually challenging you. We'll be right back. This is the Carol Cox Show.
Speak to myself sometimes, and I say, oh no, Aloha, this is Carol Cox. Please join me right here at KWAI 1080 AM from 9 o'clock to 11 a.m. on Sunday mornings. You can also catch us on podcasts at carolcox.com, CarolCox.com. You can also share your news tips with us at carolcox.com.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
I just stopped in this evening to get myself a little taste. The music is nice and swinging, and of course, I really dig the place. Of course, I haven't had much sleep lately, and I feel sort of down and out.
Yeah, but look over there in the corner.
Oh, yeah, there's something to shout about. Hey, hey, pretty baby. Girl, don't you go.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. And we're having a wonderful time talking to Miss Bridget Hammerquist from Kauai, Friends of Mahaulepu. And I think we're going to also have her another member of the organization, Friends of Mahaulepu, Eileen Ketchloin. And we're fleshing out this recent, in the past legislative process, HCR 120, and talking about the Hawaii Dairy Farms and a couple of things you might be interested in. It's rare we get a gift such as this, an example of what is going on with business in our environment and how people are able to whittle away at what little protection we have, claiming to making it better. So without further ado, I'm going to bring them back on. And good morning. How are the two of you?
Hi, Carol.
Hello. I got a beep in the background.
I don't know what that is.
A whale flying over the... Okay, you there? Are you there?
Bridget, we call in again? Should we dial back in?
One of you try again. Let's see if it's...
I'll try again.
Okay.
Bye.
Never heard that. That's an unusual buzz.
No. Maybe I better try again, too. I came in on the 888.
Okay. You there? Okay, go ahead. We'll try again. But anyway, okay, I got you there. Is this Bridget?
Okay, that's better.
That's better for you. Now let's see if Bridget calls in, and we'll see if we can. But anyway, how are you, Eileen? If you would, go ahead.
I'm doing good. I've been studying all the different versions of HCR 120, and I find it very interesting that Ulupono is in the first couple of versions and has obvious control over it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they disappear as it progresses through.
So did you have the same seasick feeling that something was wrong here, that... Ulupono has put in for a dairy on your island, and in turn they got their hands slapped because the courts ruled they were wrong, and ruled in you folks' favor. And then all of a sudden there's this new House concurrent rules talking about criticizing the OEQC for its showing favoritism, basically, to one side than the other, than the developer.
Yes, I mean, what's happening is over here on Kauai, where the dairy is supposedly going in, it's real quiet. And
mm-hmm.
The people are starting to think that the dairy's gone.
Right.
They don't understand that what the dairy has done is taken a different tack, and it is now attacking at a state level and attacking the state agency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the people in them.
I better hang up. I just tried dialing in.
Hold on. Step back from your computer. You might be right near your computer.
It's not me. It's
no,
Bridget.
I know, Bridget.
No, I think it's when the both lines are being used carefully.
Now, try to back off on the your computer. Are you near your computer?
No,
okay.
Not at all. No, I'm just on the landline.
Okay, well, we'll talk and then listen in when Eileen shut down, then we can bring you back, Bridget.
Okay, no
okay,
problem.
Okay, I apologize. These are new phone systems.
Okay.
And
okay. I tried the 524-9510. Okay, bye-bye.
I was just informed it was killed. Okay, thank you.
Uh-oh.
No problem.
Yeah.
Stay on, Eileen.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So now I do apologize to the listeners. It was new to me that we have no longer that other number, and I don't know why. It said we could receive two calls at once or three calls, but apparently it's not as good. But anyway, go ahead. You were talking about
the... What's happened is now basically the island of Kauai is in the dark, and they're, you know, thinking that because the two court cases were won basically against the dairy, and that the dairy's had all their permits and approvals rolled back by the judge, and then that their FEIS was turned down by OEQC recommendation. But
rightfully so, though, right? It wasn't just turned down. It was based on merited, right? Merits.
Oh, yes, and there were multiple things. But what they're attacking, there were multiple reasons, including the fact that they didn't study, like, the marine environment.
Mm-hmm.
And they included that study in the FEIS, but that wasn't in the DEIS. So that's mentioned in there, too. There's several things that are mentioned in that letter, but
mm-hmm.
what they're attacking is the public comment.
Right.
They don't like the fact that they have to answer our comments. I went and testified in front of the Environmental Council,
mm-hmm.
and I told them, I said, you know, I worked 8 hours a day for 45 days reading and cross-referencing everything in their DEIS to write up my comments, and they want to be able to batch them. In other words, if my comments about water and your comments about water, but you didn't do any studying, you just wrote down what about the water, they want to be able to choose yours over mine and then not even print mine.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're actually trying to do right now.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I get very specific about the fact that, you know, what are you going to do when you hit the groundwater at 2 feet and you're planning on digging down 16 feet for your effluent pond?
And they're going away complaining.
Yes. They're whining. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I did listen to the Think Tech show with Jay and two of the people that are putting on the conference, Greg Chung and Pete Adler, and he says, so we don't want any whining or something like that, as if it's the public participants that are whining.
This,
you know, and they're trying to claim that we're not, that when we make our comments, that we are not really representing the community.
Yeah.
And when in fact, there's 1,000 of us at least over here that we're representing.
This is an assault on the public's right to know, the public's right to participate. And when you get an entity that has proposed something and lost because they couldn't operate within the parameters of the law, now they move their show across the ocean to Honolulu to influence directly the legislators and build a rule that would then make, basically take out the powers of OEQC. But here's this, before we go any further, we've been hinting about this 120. Ulupono, this is Ulupono's letter, and I'll get right back to you. Ulupono Initiative supports HCR 120 HD1, requesting the Office of Environmental Quality Control apply consistent standards to all applicants and agencies, follow statutory intent of the legislature, update legislators on guidance and documents and interpretation, and support the Environmental Council's effort to update Hawaii Administrative Rule 11200. Now, if you're not giving the public the right information and you're not following the law as confirmed by the judges, then how can you go back and complain that you need to revisit OEQC and strip it of its standard practices now and then complain as if... How did they determine, Eileen, that OEQC was broken at all? to advance such a policy, such a rule.
Because they determined that because their FEIS was not acceptable. And they have money.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can, you know, the thing with Ulupono that I found out is they're putting money everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So that people that need the money, you know, or represent organizations that need the money, or corporations that can use the money, have to go along with them or they'll lose their funding and they can cease to exist if they lose their funding. But one of the things that I wanted to go over in Ulupono's letter, that's in part of HDR 120 in the first couple of...
This is their letter of testimony.
In their testimony.
Okay, in support of this bill. Okay.
They talk about comment bombing. You know, because there were so many people in our community that were interested and active in commenting on their FEIS, their DEIS, and they called it comment bombing. They're saying that we're comment bombing them, and we're not. We have hundreds of people that show up for meetings that are so upset about the fact that they're going to lose their quality of life and their health, maybe, because of the things that move in the air, bacteria and the nitrogen and sulfur and stuff. And, you know, it's going to ruin their property values. It's going to ruin their ability to use the beach. So these people are coming out in droves,
mm-hmm.
and they're deciding that this is comment bombing. In other words, that we're just trying to keep them busy, so busy that they, you know, cost them too much money to do it. And then the other thing is they're talking about the application shifted to address litigation concerns for state agencies. So basically what they're saying is that the only reason they got turned down or told that theirs wasn't sufficient was because the agency were afraid of being sued by us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we didn't sue the agencies. We've been, you know, we haven't ever expressed that we wanted to sue the agencies, but we don't want to have the Clean Water Act violated by the dairy.
And as Bridget, it was submitted, two courts, federal and state, reviewed this and ruled unfavorably to them as confirming what you folks were concerned with and raising. So they didn't appeal, as Bridget pointed out.
Right.
So it's an eye-opener for me in modern times to see, it used to be how they take tidbits and incrementalize and maybe they would influence one politician. No, they are going and rewriting legislation now to tailor it specifically and go on the attack to a full agency that's already been short of funding and not getting its adequate funding to man these and do thorough reviews. But even that...
And Carol, they're also going to be running this conference December 1st over in Honolulu at UH, where Ulupono's funding it and Civil Beat. And basically, it's Ulupono's money putting it on, and they're inviting agencies. They say they're inviting nonprofit organizations, and they're inviting corporations. And the goal is to come up with several ideas for legislation, because, as they call it, the polarized public, at any rate, what they mean is that that there's just too many people commenting,
right.
And they don't like it, and they think, you know, so they want to figure out ways of getting around it.
Now, there's one other supporter of this bill, and that was Jessica Woolley.
Yeah.
A former House representative, former head of OEQC, and Jessica Woolley. And I think it's important that we read some portions of her letter and Ulupono's letter. And I'll ask you to read Ulupono's out to the public because
okay.
Because it's so critical, just to show I am shocked that our legislators even gave them the time, and I'm equally shocked that they would be moving toward the public policy office and embrace being embraced by them to advance this, as if they say, oh, OEQC is broken. Well, I didn't see any other support from any other organization or company that complains about the same thing. So Jessica Woolley, who was the previous director of Office of Environmental Quality, and she writes to Joe Suki, the purpose of this measure is to urge the Department of Business and Economic Development. That was the first right, as you know, as she wrote, and that was the first right, HDR Draft 1 or whatever. So it was a whole different bill. Now the actual bill, apply consistent standards to all the applicants. She goes on to say, I lost her document. But Ms. Woolley was really, let me find that document. It's critical. Go ahead, Eileen, until I find
it. Well, I'll read part of Lulu Pono's.
Yeah, please.
Whining. It says OEQC has dramatically changed how it interprets the rules governing environmental impact statements, EISs, in a way that raises the bar for acceptance under HRF 343. The effect of this new interpretation would be to significantly increase the time and expense for what it is already a lengthy and expensive process. Most importantly, it would put many projects beyond the reach of those who would otherwise want to develop them. In brief, the OEQC would require a point-by-point response to non-substantive comments as to why they are not substantive. This is contrary to guidance issued by OEQC in 2012 and opens the door to comment bombing, which enhances the ability of small groups of individuals to effectively slow or block new development through a deluge of comments. What you see here is the same thing that if you look on the national one, they have to do these things on the national one, so they can't be more restrictive on ours less restrictive on our Hawaii Environmental Policy Act than they are on the national one. And, you know, they're saying that it's made it too difficult for them to get their acceptance of their FEIS because the bar has been raised, which it hasn't. It was really set originally. It's just how are they interpreting it? And Ms. Woolley now decides that she's going to interpret a certain way and that this is being interpreted differently. But when I was over at the Environmental Council, they had somebody look up how many EISs actually have been before them, and most of them were from agencies, and like I don't remember how many years it was, but it was over multiple years. They could only find two that were by private parties, private corporations. So it's not like everybody is trying to get a lot of business done here and being stopped by this process. No, our environment's being protected by this process.
Mm-hmm. Now, on Willie's letter, she wrote this on March 23rd, another letter, to regard in support to Cregan, Committee of Chair Members. She says that the review process under H.R. 343, Chapter 343, is exactly that, a process. It was never intended to be a tool to halt actions that should move forward. New interpretations of the law appear to do exactly that, allow litigators the opportunity to make a profit off of an indefinite, potentially infinite loops of challenges on non-substantive issues, unrelated to any potential environmental concerns. Now, this is the lady that served in that capacity, and I can't find one single letter during her tenure as a director of that agency where she raised this issue. So I think I would be in my right to solicit, are you being paid off? I mean, to ask that question, as insulting as it may sound, you cannot be the head of that agency and you don't express this and you don't try to revamp it and we don't see any legislative effort on your part to do that. But now you're aggressive. The process is at risk of becoming unhelpful, she says, to the public as well. Over the years, litigation rules and guidance have increased the level of detail that must be provided to be considered acceptable to environmental assessment and draft environmental impact statements. The latest interpretation of how guidance will be applied creates the expectation for a level of detail at a magnitude never seen before. And in contrast to the purpose of the statute itself, this level of detail will actually discourage public participation as the relevance of the documents becomes buried in tomes of legalese and technicalities. So I can't take this with a grain of salt because she was the head of the agency and didn't raise these issues. But now her relationship, I don't know, her newfound glory or I don't spiritually... Something went wrong here.
You mean, why didn't she change it when she was in power?
Well, I mean, you would think if she's this adamant about it now and having the capacity early on under Neil Abercrombie as he appointed her, you would think there would be some indication or some letters or something that would suggest she's thinking in this vein.
Mm-hmm. Right. You would think that that's when it would be taken care of if she was running into this problem.
Right.
Where there was, the other thing that the Environmental Council did talk about was putting together a guidelines booklet or whatever with more clear examples for the agencies to look at as to what the interpretation should be of their intent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she could have done that.
Right.
If she was having problems, she could have put together a guidelines book.
Yeah. And in her letter, she says, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, just so that the agencies could understand. And then if she had, would there be any question now?
Well,
no.
We have a right to ask these questions. Are you being disingenuous about this? We have a right. If you were the head of this agency and now you were remiss in your efforts or your duties and now all of a sudden you're adamant and you're vehement about these things, something doesn't wash there. But anyway, she says, in addition, any change in the expected level of detail must be clarified to all parties, including consultants attempting to draft acceptable documents to ensure consistency and avoid surprise, quote, got you moments that will prevent beneficial actions from moving forward or at least promote the skyrocketing costs of to comply. For these reasons...
maybe Jessica should have read the FEIS. And then I would have sat down with her and showed her the discrepancies in Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Right.
And I could have shown her exactly how every person that commented got a cut-and-paste answer.
Mm-hmm.
They looked at all the subjects that were covered. They came up with a canned paragraph about it. And if you mentioned water, you got the canned paragraph about water. It didn't make a difference if you're talking about the stream, the ocean water, or the groundwater, or the aquifer.
Right. Now, I want to ask you a question. You may know this, may not, or Bridget may know. Did Ulupono raise any of these in the court process? Did Ulupono allude to or suggest or that this structure or this failure at OEQC impacted their ability to comply with the law as a judge ruled against them? Did they ever raise that as saying, Your Honor, because things are so mucked up over there at OEQC, we really can't do the right thing. We can't. We have to dig this pond without the permits. We have to do, the Clean Water Act violations. We have to write statements that we swear to but that are not true. Did they ever approach the judge?
No, actually, they did not.
So
now, the DEIS had come out earlier. Their FEIS, they filed the day that we settled on a consent decree.
Mm-hmm.
To where they have certain best management practices that they need to do and other things that they need to stop doing and think, you know, it's just our consent decree is a long list of what they can do and what they can't do and what they need to do. And so, yeah, at that point they hadn't.
Yeah, so in her
and
letter...
they came out that day with their FEIS. They immediately, the day, literally within hours
yeah.
of our signing the consent decree around their FEIS in.
Here's someone that this letter suggested she was just mad at the world for not keeping the being held in place there or being reappointed by Governor Ige. And also... her efforts seem to impugn, attempt to impugn or speak negative to the new Scott Glenn in his capacity.
Right.
For example, for these reasons and more, I support this resolution requesting OEQC apply consistent standards to all applicants and agencies. That's suggesting with a foregone conclusion that Scott Glenn did the opposite, what she's suggesting, because or where did she, what would prompt her to say that, and what would she be motivated for saying that, and what is she drawing from to draw that conclusion? So follow the statutory intent of the legislature and update legislators on guidance and updates. Well, I might add, she wrote two letters on this, and this what was this bill, HCR 120? How many did you count? Eight rewrites?
Yeah.
And then there was...
Well, the other coincidence that's happening right now, Carol, that I don't think you may be aware of, is that the Department of Agriculture, our friend Scott Enright's organization, has come out with a new exemption list of things and that shall be exempt from EISs and EAs.
So
it's just coincidental... that it's happening all at the same time.
Well, I might suggest then, because if there is a new list, then Scott Enright has worked with Jessica Woolley on this.
Well, he definitely had words with Ulupono,
mm-hmm.
because he point blank told us that he goes to some of their board meetings.
Right, and he was he's very close with them,
and,
right.
and that he will contact them about our concerns.
So I'm thinking that because I've seen him do it on the Bicky bike kind of thing, and others do this,
mm-hmm.
and so I would say request a letter, any documents from Jessica Woolley on the exemption list that they have, because it's a unique way of doing things. You get to allow the director to write what is exempted, and it may be based on some minuscule item, something very small.
So
but
what happens, and this is my thought process, okay, is that when they're on the exemption list, then when they make an application, they say, oh, yeah, well, we don't have to do an EA, we don't have to do an EIS because we're on the exemption list.
Mm-hmm.
But, in fact, what that does is make communities and agencies think that, you know, they're exempt.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth of the matter that I found out the other day is that, in fact, the courts have not even referred to exemption lists. And it doesn't make a difference to them if it's on an exemption list.
Mm-hmm.
All they care about is are they affecting the environment? Are they breaking the law?
Right.
You know, and but the problem is, it's the same thing as when the Hawaii Dairy Farms first came out and told us they had an NRCS permit, which, of course, doesn't exist. There's no such thing. That made the community think it was a done deal, and they all were just shocked, because how did this get by us? How come we didn't know anything about it? Because it doesn't exist. But many, many people thought it was a done deal. It's the same sort of thing. It's how the exemption list will make our community think these projects are exempt and don't need to do things.
Right. And again, Ulupono's letter, for example, here's something that caught my eye, and there's much more to it. But The new interpretation of the letter says would play directly into the hands of opponents of any project requiring an EIS because they would be strongly motivated to have each person opposing the project submit as many lengthy and convoluted written comments as possible. That is a bald-faced lie, and it's a misrepresentation because OEQC...
It's an insult, Carol. It's an insult to the community. That's what it is. It's very disrespectful for them to say things like that, especially when who's writing these comments are scientists who have retired, who retired here, or are scientists that work here. It's not like it's not like it's a group of idiots writing these.
Yeah. Ulupono goes on to say, it is likely that the written comments from many individuals opposing the project, a project, would run hundreds of pages in an effort to overwhelm the project applicants and thereby to stop the project. This would be true for both private projects and government projects. The project applicant, whether a private applicant or a state or county agency, would have to respond to each point. In each written comment, the result would be a subversion of the reason for involving public in the EIS process, the benefit to all parties involved and society as a whole. One of the most important concepts for a fair business market is consistency. And consistency in the application of rules is key. Fundamentally, the lack of consistency raises the issue of fairness. But yet, we had all kinds of violations, and while we were preaching this and spewing this, we got our butts handed to us in court because we violated the law. We conducted activities without the necessary permits. While applying for a permit, we continued to do the work. That's
not only that, is that they got exemptions for grubbing and grading when, in fact, they shouldn't have had exemptions for grubbing and grading because it was part of a larger project.
And
so this was a judge that everything they did out there should not have been done.
There was a term he used about people with money or something of that nature, and I was trying to find...
Well, you know, Jessica, I think it was Jessica Woolley in hers.
Lelik or...
talks about saying that these people are well-heeled.
Well-heeled people, yeah.
Right, and he's just going, now, is that an opinion,
so,
or is that a fact?
So you don't...
You know, come on.
You don't have any money problems, you're saying? Well-heeled. I read that statement, and I thought, this is sad. This is a sad commentary about our government entities, because she just vacated that office. And that
Carol, the whole thing there is that, you know, we have people that send us $10.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Now, you know, if they're sending us $10, one minute they send us $8, you know? They're, you know, bless them. they're struggling to eat. And here she's saying we're all well-heeled.
Well-heeled.
You know? Well-heeled. Good term. Huh?
And our legislators, that group of people on the Act, they accepted this and advanced it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, are you going to attend this meeting on December 1st at the, and again?
Yes, because I really do want to hear Amy Hennessy from Hawaii Dairy Farms get up in front of the whole group and whine about how hard it's been. And, you know, because that's all it's going to be. You know, there are some people there that I have hope for, that they really will actually contribute on an honest basis, but I don't know. I mean, for them to just put her up, she has no qualifications. She's a communications director. She's the one that makes everything sound good. She's a spin doctor. Now, you know, why is she up there when everybody else has alphabet soup after their name?
Well, I'm searching for words to understand why, how the Ulupono can advance this thing through the legislature. Mr. Gabbard did, in fact, table it and did not move forward with this resolution. I guess he saw what it was worth and how fishy it was. But then this other tactic of going and embracing and becoming part of this community effort to, again, through this meeting on December 1st, is somewhat alarming, that to see to what degree, and while all along, everything I read is that they talk about sustainability and green and growing food here and saving energy.
All good words.
And
that, you know, that's what it is, and it's all sin because bad dairy is anything but sustainable. Anytime you're importing food from the mainland for your cows, you're not sustainable.
Right.
Sustainable means everything comes from the farm, and it's like a closed system.
Right.
The farm takes care of itself. That's sustainable.
Well, unless you're Well Hill, you can fly your food in.
Right, if you're really Well Hill.
You know, I really want to meet some Well Hill people. So if you know any, please. I haven't found any.
Well, I wear flip-flops. I got rid of any heels I had.
So if you save the environment now, it was the hippies. Now you're a Well Hill person if you care to put
right.
your money where your mouth is, isn't it, and protect your interests and the environment. What does that say about our American values? If you fight to get it, you get criticized, and you become defined as Well Hill.
Right. Well, you know what's really worrisome to me is they keep hiding. Lulu Pono keeps hiding behind the skirts of small farmers. And every time they say anything, it's go, oh, this is going to be horrible for the small farmers. Well, the truth of the matter is, a group of small farmers wrote in to the editor of our paper and said, that's not true. It doesn't affect us. It only affects you. You know, but they every time they turn around, that's what it is. Hide behind the skirts of the small farmer. Small farmers don't make that type of an impact. Small farmers, you don't have to worry about tons and tons and tons of manure going down the stream into our ocean on top of our coral reefs. You don't have to worry about that.
Well,
small farmers.
I'm hoping that the listeners out there in the future, if anything is advanced on this, that they in turn reject it. We need, and hopefully, I decided to do this show because this is a shock to me that while you guys, you know, I've asked, what's happening over there? Is anything, are they moving? Are they starting up again? And the word is no. The answer is no. But then to learn that they're aggressively over here in my backyard.
Right.
Working.
Right. And the problem is there's no way to know what they're doing.
Right.
If it weren't for people calling us and saying, did you know about this?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's...
We wouldn't have known. There's no way we would have known.
Yeah. And real quickly, you got anything else that you want to say? And then I bring back Bridget if you give her...
No, go ahead and bring back Bridget. And thank you so much, Carol, for this
opportunity. And, okay, and Bridget, if you would call... And thank you, Eileen. It's going. Thank you.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha. So, folks, this is... I'll read you a couple of the... what they write in testimony, requesting the Office of Environmental Quality Control apply consistent standards to all applicants and agencies who determine that... I mean, if it's just a suggestion, that's one thing. Aloha. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show.
Hi, this is Bridget.
Okay. Take off where we left with you, and I appreciate Eileen, and again, I apologize, but we make do with what we got. I can hear your computer in the background. I can hear myself.
Yes, I'm going to move away from the computer. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You there? Okay.
No problem. I'm here with you now.
Okay. All righty. Well, anyway, we were talking. I'm sure you were listening in. And
yes, I was.
Pick up where we left off.
Well, I think that it is really good to expose and share with the public all that you have, Carol, because even the legislators probably don't really appreciate that there were two court cases, that they lost both court cases, that they gave up their right to appeal because they didn't have any grounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came back to the legislature and tried to introduce a bill that suggested that the Office of Environmental Quality Control is applying a different standard to different contractors, to different developers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no evidence of that either. I mean, they just say that this bill is to make sure the Office of Environmental Quality Control applies its standards evenly, equally, to all applicants.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been no indication that they've done anything to the contrary. And as you were pointing out, when Jessica Woolley was head of the office, there wasn't any suggestion or efforts made by her to change the Hawaii administrative rules that enforce our Environmental Protection Act. And those rules, by the way, had been in a draft form since 2012. So she was in office, held that post under Abercrombie, and could have made changes to the rules if she thought they needed them. And now, all of a sudden, they need them after they are properly applied, and they expose an effort by a developer that doesn't meet environmental standards, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So now they need fixing because somebody's been exposed as a potentially very harmful. I mean, this is not not a benign operation. This is an operation that's going to make 70,000 pounds of liquid manure a day at a minimum. And this is that interesting thing that I started to tell you about earlier about how they filed their draft EIS, with the department. And then 7 days earlier, they filed an amendment to their waste management plan with the head of the wastewater branch. And in that amendment, the cows that they reported would be producing 140 pounds of wet manure a day, weighed 1,210 pounds, according to their plan. Average weight of that cow was 1,210 pounds. Then when they filed the amendment, they said the cow was going to weigh 1,200 pounds. The average adult cow was going to weigh 1,200 pounds. So they showed on this chart that there was a 10-pound weight loss. But they said the manure output was going to be 90 pounds per day per cow. I don't know where that 50 pounds went of wet manure. They never did say how they got from 140 pounds a day, which was their waste management plan for over 3 years with the state, down to 90 pounds a day. But
mm-hmm.
they just put it in print and said that's what it's going to be. So we took that number, the 90 pounds per cow per day, and it works out to 70,000 pounds of wet manure a day, which is, you know, a lot of wet manure. And over a month, it's over 210 million. I mean, it's 2 million, isn't it? 2,100,000 pounds a month.
Hmm.
If I'm doing my math right, 30 times 70,000, it gives you, 2 million pounds of wet manure a month on that site, which is only 469 acres. The total grazing acreage for this proposed site was 469. Is it away from water? No. It's within 700 feet of our drinking water wells. It's right over the aquifer that refills the wells. And it's 0.6 mile upslope from a beach with a stream that connects that site to the beach. It drains the site. They admit there's a stream, the Waiopili, that all their drainage ditches empty into. So the fact that 200 commenters, and I just wanted to add this too, there is a lot of projects that go down that people file postcard objections to, and sometimes they lodge like 1,500 postcards. That's kind of a form response, but even that, the Environmental Council said, you need to at least register people's names. But there wasn't any comment bombing in the Hawaii Dairy Farms project. There were 200 comments. There wasn't 1,500. I mean, there's been lots of projects filed in the state of Hawaii that have had 1,500 postcards or 1,000 form letters or 500 letters. This had 200 well-written comments.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not comment bombing. That was just exposing the facts.
Wow.
And the facts were that it was environmentally unsafe.
Follow this thought, if you would, for a minute, and make sure that I'm accurate about this. Didn't they initially say that the submittal of the EIS or the EA was voluntary?
Yes, they. Well, it was interesting, the word transition, the spin.
But I mean, speaking to.
It came out that they were voluntarily going to do an EIS. Okay.
Right.
Now there's an EIS. They're going to voluntarily do an environmental impact study.
Right.
And it went from voluntarily going to do an environmental impact study to doing a voluntary environmental impact study. Like, that's a different creature with different rules.
Now, you must have a hole in your head if you are volunteering something and you know that it's already broken and it's stacked against you, as you described in this new resolution,
well,
and you go and volunteer, and then you come back and then you piss and moan that it's... See, this is what bothers me about good government. They don't have any embarrassment. I'd be embarrassed to advance something like that after I've told the public, well, you know, we don't really have to do one, but we're volunteering. And then you're now screaming, all get up, that it's stacked. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know.
When was that assessment?
A letter in the Department of Ag records that was written by their attorney to them that they submitted to the Department of Ag with a memo saying they probably weren't going to be able to avoid doing an EIS because they knew the amount of waste they were going to put on the ground was so voluminous, it triggered the Hawaii Revised Statute 343. They had to do an environmental impact because that's what environmental impact studies are all about. If you're going to put toxic material on the earth or somewhere in some environment where it can get into water and get into the ocean, you've got to say how you intend to keep it safe, how you intend to keep it out of there. And, you know, they're having this problem right now in the Big Island with Big Island Dairy draining into the Pacific Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
They've been cited by the State Department of Health for contaminating the waters of the U.S. And their owner, Derek Whiteside, and people can get all this stuff on our website. Just follow the breaking news, and there's all the paragraphs, there's all the links that will take you to court judgments. It'll take you to a newspaper interview with the owner of the Big Island Dairy. August 14th, New York Times, he tells the New York Times reporter, well, it's going to the ocean. Yeah, it's running through this community of Ocala, the manure. Untreated, raw sewage full of bacteria. He knows it's full of bacteria. E. coli. E. coli can kill people from cow bacteria, from cow's poop. E. coli, Enterococcus, Salmonella, you name it, it's got it. It's flowing through the community, going into the ocean. And he says to the New York Times article, August 14th, we don't think it's coming from our effluent pond. We don't think it's coming from our milking parlor. He says, but you know, there are cows grazing out in the pastures, and that manure's got to go somewhere. That was his quote. It was, quote, that manure's got to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it's draining, and he's got a site that also is upslope from the ocean. In other words, it's not flat like his cows are back where he comes from in Idaho. It's not flat. It's sloped. It's sloped even more than the Ha'olepu Valley is sloped to the ocean. And that's the nature of Hawaii. That's the nature of our islands. We have these beautiful volcanic rock and mountains, and they slope. They leave a landmass down at the bottoms, and what happens, what rains and what goes down at the top drains to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Everything drains to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're going to put 2 million pounds of wet bacteria-laden cow manure untreated on the ground and expect it to stay there,
yeah,
you know,
but
somebody should ask you what you're smoking.
But, yeah, and again, speaking to the desire to go and rewrite and and eviscerate the agency and become critical, but speaking of critical, I will describe Jessica Woolley's, former director of the Environmental OEQC's office, as just simply toxic. And then here's an example. The state's environmental review laws, this is her letter she wrote on April 5th now, 2017, the state's environmental review laws on the HRS Chapter 343 provide the fundamental mechanism for public disclosure and review of potential actions that may have an impact on the environment. Before the actions can move forward, if the environmental review is triggered as specified by the statute, actions can be approved three ways, and this is critical, after going through an exemption list, as Eileen just raised and pointed out with Scott Enright wanting to create an exemption list, documented by the letter by letter to file, an environmental assessment or an environmental impact statement process. This review process on the HRS 343 is exactly that, a process. It was never intended to be a tool for the disgruntled. So you're disgruntled, Bridget. Of all the well-educated and the time you spend as a judge and what have you, you're just disgruntled, I guess. And likely well-heeled to halt actions that should move forward. Litigation and new interpretation of the rules appear to do exactly that, creating the opportunity for potentially infinite loops of challenges. How can someone that was affiliated with that office, were in that office, and passes herself off as an environmentalist, be so toxic and so one-sided in this presentation, in her support for HCR, House Concurrent Rules 120?
Yeah, Resolution 120. You know, I don't know. I think that it's really scary to realize how much influence money can have. We don't have, I mean, that was the one thing our lawyer told us over and over. We have to have the facts because we're fighting money.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have the money to compete with Piero Mediar. None of us are billionaires. None of us are even millionaires. Most of us are comfortable. Some of us are really struggling. Like Eileen said, we did get a lot of donations from people that would send us $20 at a time, $25, $15. And you know those people that are making those donations. They don't have. They're not, definitely not well-heeled. But he's worth $8 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So he's using his money now and getting people like a Jessica Woolley, who's an intelligent woman, educated, a lawyer, to suggest to the legislature that somehow the process has been unfair. Well, if it was so unfair, if we weren't factually accurate, if we didn't have the scientific evidence, the environmental harm wasn't a relative certainty from everything we put forth,
mm-hmm.
they would have appealed the court determination.
And
instead, they're running to the legislature, wanting the legislature to somehow admonish the Office of Environmental Quality Control not to apply
mm-hmm.
the standards of the environmental laws differently to different applicants.
And you would think...
They say that, but there's no evidence that the standards have been applied differently to different applicants.
You would think in her capacity, she would have at least known to ask, she knew there were court cases, and she should have, as an attorney and as a former director, she could have said, well, there was several court cases, the three at least, the state, federal, or two at least, and they didn't get favorable rulings. So therefore, they were found to be in the wrong. So why would she be so adamant about advancing her argument in support when, in fact, she overlooked these court rulings? But we have one more minute. Real quickly, what's the name of your organization? How do they contact you? And what do you do? Go ahead. You got 1 minute there.
It's a grassroots effort, and we're not well-heeled, but it's Friends of Mahaulepu, M-A-H-A-U-L-E-P-U, friendsofmahaulepu.org. And they can go on our site and they can contact us. They can write to friendsofmahaulepu.org, or they can write to friendsofmahaulepu@hawaiiantel.net. We have an email address, friendsofmahaulepu@hawaiiantel.net.
Okay.
We're happy to have whatever support and input the public wants to send our way. We're all pleased for the number of people that have come forward and helped. And like Eileen said, they've been really well-credentialed people that have said this would be a very bad idea. And, Carol, you have to take that seriously.
All righty. Well, thank you, Bridget Hammerquist. I appreciate it. And thanks, Eileen, for joining me. This is the Carol Cox Show. You can pick us up at carolcox.com. Aloha. We'll see you. Thank you. And don't forget to join in or go to the public participation and polarize in a polarized era, the good, the bad, the future. It's Friday, December 1st at University of Hawaii East-West Center, Emin Hall. So we'll see you next week, and aloha, and thank you for joining me. Aloha.
Show on 1080 AM KWAI Honolulu.